Good afternoon. Welcome to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
And we're glad you're with us today. You will be too. As always, we have a great show for you. We're going to be speaking in just a minute with Bill Gooting and Kim Nguyen from Dreamvest Capital Management. These folks have been doing real estate in a really interesting way for a very long time. I'm very excited about what they have to talk about because it's really cool what they're doing. They're also looking at new ventures now and other things that I think will be of great interest to you. So we'll talk with the folks at Dreamvest Capital in just a second. After that, Blaise Barillet is here. CureMatch is his company. It is a company that does, I don't even know how to describe it in a sentence or two. They do bespoke kind of cancer cures. So as an example of pancreatic cancer, everybody out there listening probably knows somebody that's stricken with some kind of cancer. Pancreatic cancer is one of the worst. I've lost three friends to it over the years. And it seems to take people quickly. And the cures that are used or the therapies that are used are not necessarily the right ones for that patient. So we're going to be speaking with him about how they use supercomputer technology to figure out which are the right therapies and the right medicines for which kind of cancer. So I'm very excited to hear about that. Let's get right to our guest. We have so much to talk about. Bill Gooting and Kim Nguyen is with us, Dreamvest Capital Management. Thank you folks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Glad you could be with us today. Tell us a little bit about Dreamvest Capital Management and what you do.
Well, you want me to take that? Okay, so briefly, we cater to, I would say, busy professionals, business owners, entrepreneurs, hands-off investors who are primarily interested in building up their passive cash flow with real estate-oriented investments.
And that is a broad area, right? Because real estate-oriented investments could be single-family homes, could be multifamily, could be commercial, and there's a dozen major categories in commercial. Do you have a particular focus or a subset of real estate that you tend to focus on?
I think we focus on predominantly three different ways. The first one is private lending. The second way is multi-family.
Right.
And then the third way we do it is, this is a lot of people would not be familiar with, but it's owner finance, joint venture to do owner finance.
I want to talk a little bit about that. Let's go back to the private lending very quickly. Private lending is something that a lot of people listening won't even have a clue about. They won't even know it exists. Now, are you talking about private lending that some people would call hard money lending, or is it a different model from hard money lending?
I would say it's a little bit of a different model. There's similarities, okay, but I think it's got its own little subset. Okay.
What would be an example of private lending? How would a deal be structured if a client of yours has capital to invest and you're going to arrange a private loan? What would that look like for the investor and the borrower?
Okay. So a lot of what we do it on are smaller residential type properties. They'll be primarily single family homes. Sometimes they're on 2 to 4 unit properties as well. But most of the time they're one-off deals where it'll be a single family residence that a private mortgage lender would be interested in loaning their money on to acquire it, maybe to fix it, but most of the time it's to acquire the property. So, in a world where interest rates aren't so high at most institutions, we're able to pay 8 to 10 to 12 times higher than what your normal institutions are paying these days.
Why would a borrower turn to a loan that costs them more than if they went to a bank? Why wouldn't they go to a traditional mortgage lender? What would cause them to borrow money on a private loan that actually costs them a lot more from the borrower's standpoint?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. The first one would be most of the assets, usually it's distressed, meaning they cannot get a loan from the bank.
Okay.
Second is that usually private lending, you tend to close the deal faster than if you go to a traditional lending where they require all the documents and it does take, 30 days to 45 days to close.
So this is one of those situations where somebody may be buying a home to fix up and sell, like fix and flip kind of thing.
Exactly.
It's on Home and Garden television and all those shows on TV about fix and flippers, right? So this is a model where somebody has a deal, they know they can buy a single family residence for, let's just throw out some numbers just to talk, they could buy it for 100 grand, maybe put 50 into it, so now they've got the 100,000 purchase, the 50,000 fix up, and now maybe they can sell it for 300,000. That would be an extraordinarily good deal. I know that.
That'd be a great deal.
Yeah. But that's the point, though, right? It's that's how these kinds of things work from time to time. Somebody can find a home that needs to be fixed up to be sold, and they need the money quickly to close on the deal.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely.
And when you say distressed buyers, is that distressed because of their credit? Can you help people that have bad credit if they want to do something like that?
It could be a distressed buyer, or it could be the property is in distress.
Ah, okay.
So it can't get a loan.
So the property being in distress means it needs to be fixed
up. Yes, it
right.
needs to be fixed up.
So if somebody gives money to invest on that kind of model, the returns I'm expecting are better than they could get investing in, say, traditional mortgages at 3%, right? So what kinds of returns do private lenders get? Do they get something upwards of 8%? Is it more than that from time to time?
We're looking around 8 to 12%.
8 to 12% return. Mm-hmm. So just to finish this up on the private lending, how secure is the money that somebody loans on a property like that? How do you calculate how secure that money is?
Well, the collateral will be the property.
Right.
Yes. So usually you can lend up to 70% LTV, loan to value ratio. So there's a buffer there just in case if they have to foreclose and take the property back. But really all the investments is secure with the real estate.
So the lending actually is secured by the real estate with a first trust deed.
Typically.
California uses trust deeds. I guess other states use different formats, don't they?
Yeah.
Besides
a
trust deed, but it is secured with the property.
Yes.
So if the person that's going to fix it up and flip it falls away from the project or becomes ill or whatever, then maybe the lender has to foreclose on the property, but because you're only loaning 70% of the value, there's enough security there that they can get their money back when it's sold. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And when we say 70%, we're typically, so we just make sure that our investors have an equity cushion that serves as their collateral and security, right? And when we say 70%, it's the acquisition price plus the rehab.
Ah, so it might not be 70% of the acquisition price, but it's 70% of the value of the acquisition and the rehab
exactly.
that's going to happen on there.
Right.
Do the people borrowing the money have to have some of their own money in the deal generally?
I think it's case by case sometimes. I mean, a lot of the times it's such a great deal with enough of an equity buffer that we're okay with going. I mean, if they don't have a ton of money.
Let me ask you to hold that thought for a second. Bill Gooting and Kim Winter here. DreamVest Capital Management is their company. You're listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're going to hear how you can do well in the real estate market, huh? That'll be good news. Stay with us.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We're broadcasting today from ESET Studios, ESET Internet Security. Do more. Want a podcast of the show? Of course you do. Go to ESPN1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. And please, go listen to the podcast. Even if you don't care about listening, download it and run it, because we get brownie points with Nielsen and we're trying to get our ratings up. I know this is so shameless to ask for ratings help, but we really are new in this time slot and I really want to impress the bosses.
Yeah,
huh?
Come on and leave us messages. You can even go on Facebook Live and ask questions and we might actually ask your question on air, because nobody does it. So if you're the one person doing it, you might get your voice on air.
Yeah. Well, we do have some faithful listeners.
My mom tunes in.
Yes, that's true.
Thanks, Mom.
She's one of our most faithful listeners, so we know we've always got one for sure, right?
All right.
Let's get back to our guest. DreamVest Capital Management is their company. Kim Nguyen and Bill Gooting are with us. They are at the helm of a company that does real estate investing. And I'm guessing not just real estate investing, but you help other people invest in real estate as well. Is that be a fair statement, that you help people invest in real estate?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say so.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about the private lending, which is lending on deals that somebody needs the money quickly, or maybe they can't get it through a traditional bank situation. There's two sides to that, the person that borrows the money and then the person that lends the money, and you facilitate that transaction. I'm guessing you make money on handling the transaction somehow.
Yeah.
Actually, we do it predominantly on our own transactions, our own deals.
Oh, it's your money you're lending out like that?
No, it's on our projects.
On your projects.
Yes.
So you're the ones that are borrowing the money to do the projects you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes it even more interesting then, right? So give us an example of the kind of project that might look on. Because I know if we go to your website, you have some sample past projects there. And by the way, the website is GoDreamVest.com, right?
That's it.
GoDreamVest.com, all one word. So there are examples of some of the past deals on there. What are some of the deals like that you've closed out on? What did they look like? Because I made up an example of a $100,000 home. You put 50 into it and sell it for 300.
Right.
I guess that's kind of like too good to be true.
I don't know. Our philosophy is if it sounds too good to be true, it's at least worth really diving into and analyzing it, okay, before I toss it out.
That's interesting. So you don't just toss it out because it's too good to be true. You do run into deals that are pretty fantastic from time to time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what would be an example of a deal? What would one look like?
Oh, boy. I mean, we've got a ton. You got any specific examples?
Oh, that's a recent one. We purchased the property with acquisition rehab for and closing costs for $49,500.
Mm-hmm. I take it that wasn't in San Diego.
No. No,
okay.
I don't think you can get a garage in San Diego. Okay. And then we end up putting $5,000 to do light repairs.
Right.
And then we turn around and list it on the market to sell. We end up, we have multiple offers. It was 87 was the highest, but then the appraisal came in 83. So we sold and closed at 83.
Are you guys doing the work yourself, or do you have subcontractors or a team that works with you exclusively that goes in and does the work?
We actually manages the subcontractors.
So you don't physically go in with a hammer and start knocking, put new cabinets in. That's not your thing?
No, I don't think
ourselves.
when you see on TV the fix and flippers, I always thought that those were kind of fake, that they didn't really make that much money. But, wow, that's a pretty good return. You're talking about like a 70% return on a property that you put $55,000 into, ballpark.
No, it's $49,500. The $5,000 is already inclusive.
Oh, the $5,000 was inclusive.
Yes.
In that.
Yes.
So you even did better.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So for the investor that invested with us, their return was a 12% return, and it was, I think, 6 months project.
That's pretty good. So if you annualize that at 6 months, that's 24% a year, which is a great return for the investor. Plus, you guys did well. Now, I know that we talked a little bit before coming on air that you're looking at some multifamily projects. And Bill, I think you gave me some numbers the other day, like when we had the 08-09 catastrophe in the United States, how many foreclosures there were in Finglesamley. Did I just say that? Finglesamley.
We don't know that asset class.
We'll just make it up right now. Single family residences, there were high foreclosure rates. Mm-hmm. But give us the numbers on that versus the multifamily foreclosure that you talked about.
Okay, yeah. We thought that was, we put that in the category of a very compelling reason why we're shifting a bit. Our focus has always been a good chunk in the commercial multifamily space, you know, also known as larger apartment complexes. But one of the compelling reasons also was, you know, because we're putting everything through a stress test these days, right? So we're close watchers of the property cycle. So we understand that timing is critical to this whole thing, right? So when we acquire anything these days, we're looking at multiple things. We're looking at how the area did, how the region did, how the neighborhood did, but also how a sector, you know, and one of the interesting aspects is we're also looking at sectors. Okay, so when we took a close look at this during the great, so how did a specific asset class perform during a downturn or during a recession?
Which would have been 08, 09, the most recent real
great
estate.
Great recession.
Yes.
Yeah, so when we look at that, we know, right, the single family space, highest number of foreclosures in our history, right? So the delinquency, serious delinquency rate for single family homes, Fannie Mae loans that is, shot up to 9%.
Doesn't that's nationwide now, right?
Nationwide. It doesn't sound significant, but you know, one tick is million.
We're talking an asset class that's about $30 trillion.
Exactly. Right. So that was significant. It translated into the highest number of foreclosures in our history, okay? But now compare that to commercial multifamily.
Larger apartment complexes.
And so during that same time frame, the serious delinquency rate at the height of the Great Recession was 0.08, not even 1%.
That's pretty incredible. So compare the apartment complexes, the larger ones, and I'm guessing you're talking like 20 units and up, that kind of thing, or are we talking?
Ideally, yes. I think a minimum benchmark we like to say is at least 16 units, but we like even bigger, 40 plus, 50 plus,
and
even 100.
Those had less than 1% foreclosure rate or delinquency rate, whereas in single family homes, it was up to 9% at one point in time. That's a huge difference. So
90% difference is
that. I'm guessing, and this seems to make sense to me, that if the economy gets really bad, the people that can no longer afford their homes move into apartments. I mean, that would be a logical place for them to go. So if you're in the apartment business, if the economy gets really bad, you might actually have more tenants because people can't afford homes. Yeah. Did I just make that up, or is that real?
No, that's a good insight there.
I like that one. We'll have to go with that being a good insight. DreamVest Capital Management is with us. You're listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
We're glad you're with us. Don't you go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. You're listening to us on ESPN 1700, but did you know you could watch us too? Watch us on Facebook, visit our Biz Talk Radio page, share your comments, ask your questions, and of course, Bob always appreciates your likes and shares. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And we're glad you're with us today. We're talking real estate in after this segment coming up. Blaise Barillet will be here, CureMatch, shifting gears a little bit from real estate into cures for cancer and what they're doing in a world that really needs some help. We'll talk to Blaise in just a few minutes. Let's get back to Bill and Kim. Thank you for both being here. Appreciate it.
We're excited.
You were talking about the marketplace and single family homes being more susceptible to foreclosures in a down market like we had in 08 and 09, whereas the multifamily units were not nearly. I mean, we're talking about less than 1% distress or delinquency rate versus 9% in a huge marketplace. So the single family residences are even further broken down into A, B, C, and D class, right?
Right.
So my guess is the A class are the ones with the marble countertops and the views and the big pools and that kind of thing. Would those be, it seems to me during the Great Depression or Great Recession, those were more susceptible to price declines than even the B or the C class homes. Did you see that, or am I making that up again?
If you're making it up, that's a good assessment.
Oh,
that's,
good.
Yeah,
good.
That's, usually, that's basically what happens. The A's in a downturn, the A's are the first ones to take a hit.
So where are we at in the cycle from your point of view? I know you can't prognosticate and guarantee results, but what do you think is happening right now? Are we getting ready for another bubble burst? Because it feels like we've gone a long time without a correction.
I think when you talk about cycle, you have to look at what area of the country you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
So different areas have different real estate cycles.
Yes. If you talk about California, I don't know. I'm thinking like it's like somewhere here. But you talk about in the Midwest, Midwest is probably plateauing.
So the California real estate, when you just motion that, I'm assuming you think it's kind of near the top of the cycle?
That's my assumption, yes.
You know, I have this thing called the diaper index. The diaper index is just about the time the small investor decides they can get into the market, it's going to crash. I mean, that's because they're baby investors, right? So they finally have the confidence to leap in, and boom, it goes down. Yeah. And the A-class homes, from what I remember, declined significantly in value during the Great Recession. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, that would be our assessment as well. That's why we're okay with moving into A-class property, but after a market has bottomed out.
Ah. And that okay. this would not be – so you're, I assume you're not buying A-class units right now.
No way. Not right now. Because so during – I mean, so our assessment on the market is it – so Kim was using using her hands here. She forgets
Facebook,
we're on radio.
Facebook Live, you can see it, but on the radio you can't, right?
Okay. Yes. Your assessment, I think we're on the same page. We're a little bit top-heavy. But what's great about real estate is that the U.S. as a whole doesn't go in the same cycle. So even though we might be a little bit top-heavy here, there might be half a dozen to a dozen markets that are totally inverted where you can pop your money into and ride the wave back up.
So the Midwest would be a place where we haven't seen that meteoric rise yet in real estate. There's still opportunities in the Midwest as you see it at this point.
Definitely. There's emerging markets even within markets that have maybe been a little bit overcooked. So it's case by case. So we look for emerging markets with, you know, strong population growth, strong job growth, where we feel can ride through any storm.
Would a state be an entire cycle like Louisiana or Nebraska, or are you looking at counties or cities? In other words, how micro do you get? Do you get down to the neighborhood level when you're doing your analysis?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You get down to the actual neighborhood level where you're looking at things like the school district and what the other houses are like in that area.
Eventually. But before it even gets to that point, it starts macro,
yeah.
Of course. It starts with a region. Then we chunk it down to the state. Then we chunk it down to the county. Then to the neighborhoods. Then to the actual property. What's going on within a couple mile radius of that property?
Wow.
It starts from macro, goes to micro.
So how do you get your leads on where this is happening? Because I don't think, I mean, unless you're full-time analyzing real estate, how would you know what area to? Because I think there's
That's
a lot
three
of...
three segments, Bob.
This
is a lot, big question.
Okay, so that's a big question that requires a big answer then.
Right.
So, but there's a lot of people out there listening, I'm thinking, that probably want to know what you know.
It seems like a couple people do.
Yeah.
We get a lot of questions.
So it sounds like you have a funnel for how you know, your process for how you find these locations, and then you eventually get it down to the properties. If you locate an area in another state, are you going out to visit that area? Do you find contractors on the ground there and physically meet them? Or is technology today so good that you don't feel like that's necessary?
Interesting.
And you can do it all from your office in air condition and on your laptop?
Yeah, he sits there and waits till I'm done, and then he asks a really good question.
That's a great question. We're in the information age with everything accessible on your laptop. You can do a lot of it.
Do you use Zillow?
Huh?
Do you use Zillow?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To a certain extent, yes.
To a certain extent. Have you found that to be relatively accurate, or are there pockets of places where maybe the pricing is off quite a bit
on
Zillow?
It depends on the area.
Does it really?
Yeah, yeah.
So
and the asset class, like, it's really only good for
single
families. I find that condos not as accurate. Also, other types of just single family, they've gotten better.
How do you analyze then like apartment complexes? If there's no Zillow for apartment complexes, do you have tools and techniques for that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we have infrastructure in every market that we're in. That's
seriously.
Absolutely. And our number one criteria is we prefer an operating partner that we've probably been working with for a while. Okay, that already has infrastructure, has a team in place. Our number one criteria is we don't even consider an area unless we can have solid presence right in that market where we're right on top of it.
How long have you been doing this?
A while, 25 plus years.
25 plus years.
Yeah.
So somebody out there listening that's aching to get into real estate, they're not going to have that 25 years of experience. Will you work with people that want to invest in real estate, or do you always just use your own money?
We have, actually.
We do a combination of both because we're always thinking we want to grow.
Because I've got 10 bucks.
Okay. We'll have to come up with another program for you.
That's a multi-family unit somewhere.
I try to bargain with my $10 all the time. So far, I haven't had any takers, you know?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
So we're almost at the end here, but what size projects are you looking at right now in terms of, are you looking at $500,000, $5 million, $50 million? Where are you at in that?
I would, I would say our, in terms of commercial multifamily, our sweet spot is in that 2 to 5 million range. We're also looking at 5 to 10 million. We're starting to find opportunities there, but sweet spot is 2 to 5.
Bill Gooding and Kim Nguyen, DreamVest Capital Management. GoDreamVest.com is the website. Thank you both so much.
You've been listening to Biz Talk,
Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We'd like to take this moment to thank our engineer, Jeff Bilodeau, our music by Derek Audette, interns Sarah, Andrew, Leah, Deidre, and Chrissy. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. Couldn't do this without our interns. You know, seriously, they add so much value to this. I really appreciate their work here. We're going to shift gears now from real estate to cancer. I don't have a good segue for that one. I really don't. But it's serious business. Blaise Barillette is with us. His company is CureMatch. Blaise, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you all for having me here.
Now, you have a bit of an accent. You're from Texas, right?
Yeah, Paris, Texas. Paris, France, actually.
So you're French then?
Absolutely, I am.
Yeah, and that's why you have this little bit of a really delicious accent, because I love hearing French people speak English.
It's really hard to get rid of it.
Is it really?
Yeah, I've tried, but you know, everybody reminds me that I have somehow something of a Pepe Le Pew.
People assume that you're more interesting with the accent. Don't try to get rid of it.
I won't.
So tell us a little bit about CureMatch and what you do there.
So CureMatch is a revolutionary company that has a new way to treat cancer a little more effectively than the standard of care that what is done right now.
So you have a new way to look at treatment for cancer compared to what it is today. What would be, because I read this thing that you put out on pancreatic cancer and the fact that there's so many different treatments and they're not applied correctly a lot of times. Would that be a fair statement?
That's correct. Actually, medicine is totally shifting from a one treatment fits all for a cancer patient to actually personalized medicine, where we understand that everyone's cancer is very different. We made a lot of bad assumptions over the past decades that somebody who's got a prostate cancer, all prostate cancer are all the same, and they're not. We thought that cancer is attached to an organ, and it's not. It metastasizes to other organs. So all of that has been totally changing the way medicine is done right now, right here in San Diego. We understand it's all about an individual, about a patient. It's all about the genes, the genetic footprint that the tumors have. And instead of providing one treatment for all prostate cancer, what we're doing is actually provide a customized treatment for that one patient that has a very specific cancer.
Gotten that far along now, where we're actually kind of getting to the bespoke medicine where it's created just for you. Does that come from being able to analyze the genes of a human being? Do you figure out how that person's made up based on their genes and then apply a solution to it?
Absolutely. Actually, I just recently got my whole genome sequence for
Seriously?
Myself, and I've learned lots of very interesting things.
Illumina is one of the big companies doing that here in San Diego, right? Do you guys work in conjunction with them?
The Illumina is a company that builds the equipment to do that, and they were the first one to do that. And then you have companies who actually use the equipment to do the sequencing of DNA, whether it's for a person that's not sick or it's sequencing the DNA of the cancer cells or some other disease.
So you had your genome mapped then, right?
That's correct.
And you said you found some interesting things. I know that's
sure.
very personal, but what kinds of things would you find out by having your genome mapped?
Well, I found out that actually I have a little gene defect. And for a long time, I'm losing balance a little bit, you know, kind of like when somebody's drunk. You're walking and, you know, you lose a little bit your
right.
balance. And for 20 years, we've tried to find out what it was. Nobody could figure it out.
Wow.
And the full genome sequencing showed actually I was having a gene problem that was affecting a protein in my body that creates some sensory neurological issues.
Seriously?
Yeah, it took me 20 years
to figure
it out.
So it's not just growing older and losing balance. There's actually a deficiency in the genes that's causing that. So I can blame everything on my genes now.
You can.
Yeah. So How in the world do you, since mapping the genome is a big deal, I mean, that was a decade, two-decade long process, how in the world do you figure out what somebody's genome is today and then apply the solutions if they have cancer? It seems like that would take an awful lot of either computing power or a lot of people around it. What do you do to figure that out?
Actually, it was extremely computer intensive 15, 20 years ago to do this. Now it's becoming extremely cheap, very inexpensive. It's almost like a commodity business. And the whole idea is, what do we do with this? And one of the first applications is definitely a cancer. Cancer is very deadly. As we know, about one person in the U.S. dies from cancer every minute. There are about three other persons during that minute that are actually getting diagnosed.
Wow.
So applying DNA sequencing on tumors was very interesting to understand actually, you know, how cancer is, why cancer develops, what's wrong with these cells, you know, why do they grow, and how can we stop that?
Do you have any knowledge or understanding now of that? I mean, in other words, if somebody does have a tumor, is that because of a defect in their in a gene, or are we not quite that far yet with it?
Yeah, actually, yes, it's more than one defect. What we call defect actually is called aberration. So you have these gene aberrations, and when somebody gets his cancer tumor sequenced, the companies that provide the service come back with a list of all the aberrations. And this is something we're using at CureMatch. We bring that information into our system, and our system comes back with a selection of drugs and treatments that would work for that person.
So how is it done without that? In other words, if you're not going to, if a physician is working, an oncologist is working with a cancer patient, and they're going to recommend treatment without the information you're talking about, how is that determined in medical system today?
Yeah, it's a good question, because actually, the latest statistics show us that about only 2.5% of cancer patients use the new DNA way to understand
2.5% of cancer patients are using the model you just spoke
That's
about.
That's right. The ones who know about it.
Wow.
And it's all about patient awareness.
That means 97.5% are getting diagnosed and treated the traditional way.
So they're treating the traditional way. And one of the issues is, as we know, it takes a while for the FDA to change all of that and for the whole regulatory system in the U.S. to adopt new technologies. But if you have cancer, you don't have 3 years or 4 years to wait to fix the problem. You want to be cured right now.
The big C is probably one of the scariest things that people ever hear in their entire life, is that they have cancer.
Absolutely.
And so the traditional methodology that's being used today doesn't involve the genome. It involves the oncologist or the physician that's treating making a decision about which would be the best treatment. Is that decision made sometimes based on what's available in the hospital that they're at, or what's available close by, or do all physicians have access to all treatments?
Well, there are multiple answers to that, but the standard treatment for cancer...
Blaise, let me ask you to hold that. When we come back, we're going to talk about how cancer is treated today and what some of the solutions that CureMatch have. Either you or somebody you know will be using this at some point in time. Blaise Barillet is with us. You're listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't you go anywhere. We're going to be right back, maybe with the most important information you've ever heard. Stay with us.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We're broadcasting today from the ESET studios. ESET Internet Security. Do more. Get a podcast of today's show and any of our previous shows. Now we're talking. Go to ESPN1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan, here with Blaise Barillet. He is at the helm of a company called CureMatch. We're talking about new techniques in the medical marketplace that allow a diagnosis that is very bespoke. It's dedicated towards the person, the patient that has the cancer right now. And Blaise, thank you so much for taking time out to be here.
You're very welcome.
I want to get back to the standard treatments and how it's different at CureMatch. But you have an interesting story about why you're doing this yourself.
Yeah, I'm doing this myself because I'm also a cancer patient. And I have no biology background at all, but until I got diagnosed 4 years ago with cancer. And I am an entrepreneur, I'm an investor, venture capital guy. And I got really lucky to know a lot of people around here in San Diego. And while I was doing my research, I ended up meeting the co-founders of CureMatch, who had done at UCSD Moore Cancer Center and at the San Diego Supercomputer Center a fantastic job of starting to develop this technology. It was a project at first, and the whole idea was to just to make a business out of it so we can push it to about everybody else in the world who's got cancer.
No, that's amazing. Most people, when they find out they have cancer, retreat and kind of have a tough time dealing with it. You attack this. You went out and said, I'm going to do something to find a way to fix this.
You know, I when you hear the C word, like yeah. you say, it shocks everybody. And I guess every patient I talk to, we're all going through the same phases. So the first, it's just you're shocked. And the second, you're in denial. You're like, no, it can't be true. And then you just become angry. You're like, it's not right. It's not fair. You know, why me? And then the next step is the one that's going to decide whether you do something about it or you don't. And at that level, some people, you know, they're dead already because they just give up.
Right.
You're talking about the stages of grieving. So you got to the point where you decided you were going to do something. I'm curious, was it something about your treatment in particular you felt was maybe lacking? Or are you just such a curious person that you said there's more to this, maybe there's more that can be done?
Well, actually, it's... when I got diagnosed, everything goes very rapidly. I have a leukemia, and I got scheduled with an oncologist who right away got an appointment with me, and I got to his office, and I could see a line of people getting infusion of chemotherapy, and something was telling me it's just not right. This is not, and it sounded really like a business running more than actually a place where you're trying to make people, you know, feel better or get rid of cancer. And I just didn't go for that. And I'm so glad I didn't. If I had done that, I would probably be dead right now. When I got diagnosed 4 years ago, they told me I had 5 years to live. So I'm already there for 4 years, and you guys can't see me unless you're going on Facebook. But I look pretty good, and I felt
yeah,
very good about it.
Nobody would know
great.
By looking
yeah.
at you.
No,
nobody
you look fantastic.
Would know.
That's true. And I think a lot of... the way to fight cancer is just to stay very positive at it. There are lots of changes right now in medicine that affect every illnesses around, not only illnesses, but wellness as well. And I want to understand what are the good diet supplements and exercise that we should get just from looking at the gene of a specific individual. So this is what got me to start CureMatch.
Do you have any statistics on traditional treatment versus the treatment that CureMatch can offer? Actually, CureMatch is not a treatment. It's a tool that allows you to figure out which treatment is the right one.
Yes, I will explain more in detail.
Okay, good.
The standard treatment for most cancer is always first to surgery. If they can't remove the tumor, it's the first way to start. Then the next way is to get radiation, to get rid of whatever cells are left. And it all ends up with chemotherapy. Unfortunately, chemotherapy is not very effective at all. We've known that for years, but it was better than nothing. Some of the latest data I've seen is people who had chemotherapy, 6% of them will be alive 5 years after they started
6%.
Treatment. 6%.
Wow. That's not great odds.
It's not great odds at all.
Wow. So hearing the C word, the cancer, that you have cancer, is a death sentence for a lot of people.
For a lot of people.
I'm curious. I mean, there's a lot of types of cancer. If some people didn't go into chemo, they'd live a little bit longer. Do you think that statistic would actually be a longer statistic or a higher number if people in general were just not doing chemo at all? Or is it a necessary, you know, tool that and
are you asking if chemotherapy actually advances
I think
the,
for some people it
problem.
Can kill them quicker, right?
Well, chemotherapy works very well for some people, and actually our technology is considering as well chemotherapy, because we understand now with genetics that some of these chemicals that, you know, that are poison actually, but can really work with some gene aberrations. But you know, most people who get chemo and end up not responding well at all, and not responding at all, while some others actually might get really sicker. It might, you know, change the way the cancer is going, and the cancer might get more aggressive. So it's kind of playing Russian roulette here.
Is chemotherapy used in the majority of cancer cases these days? Is that kind of the go-to therapy, surgery, radiation, chemotherapy?
It is. You know, that industry is changing, and most oncologists, you know, have been practicing for many, many years. The oncologists who got their MD diploma after 2001 definitely had a training about genetics, and they know about precision medicine, and it's still in its infancy, but at least they're learning. But most who have developed these huge, I call that chemo shops, literally, you know, they make money out of chemotherapy, which is sad, shouldn't be that way. You know, a patient gets chemo, so the patient has to come back, needs to get an infusion, so we have a nurse, and needs to come back and come back and come back.
And their life is miserable generally while they're going through it.
Life is miserable, some cannot work, so it costs everybody a lot of money, a lot of time, and it's not very effective at the end of the day.
How does CureMatch then work differently? Do you take the information from their genome and plug it into a computer and come up with some solutions?
That's correct. So we're looking at all the FDA cancer drugs. They're close to 300 right now. And we're looking at it to combine two or three of these drugs together out of 300.
A cocktail,
literally, which is called combination therapy. Combining these drugs, it takes 4.5 million possibilities to combine three drugs with the available drugs right now. And
4.5 million combinations.
4.5 million combinations. So
that's more than a physician can work through in their head.
That's absolutely correct. You can take the best oncologist. It doesn't matter how smart he is. There's no way he can compute this by himself. That's why we need technology to help, and that's what CureMatch is doing.
Are you at the point where you need to use supercomputers? I mean, this sounds like a heavy-duty number crunching.
It is a heavy-duty number crunching thing, and good thing that the technology over the past years has really exploded to help us do that.
Blaise Barillet, thank you so much. We're going to get back to this in just a second. CureMatch is the company he's at the helm of. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't you go anywhere. We have another segment. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Tomorrow, our in-studio guest is Tracy Porterfield, founder and CEO of Love by Design. Don't miss this show. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. That sounds like, I'm guessing they're a matchmaking company.
Yeah.
Well, that ought to be fascinating.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. There's going to be some good stories there,
yeah.
Guaranteed.
Blaise Barillet is with us. CureMatch is his company. Blaise, thanks again for being here. You're an investor, entrepreneur, who was diagnosed with cancer 4 years ago, right?
That's correct.
And as a result of that, you didn't sit around and wait for somebody to give you a solution. You went out and you're hunting it down.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the patients who are aware are the ones who are very likely to be alive. You have to find your own information. You have to defend yourself. And you have to question your physicians, you know, and that's true for about every illness.
So I imagine there's a ton of information out there about from existing cancer patients who have gotten treatment and had different cocktails that were used. Is that part of what CureMatch is doing, is searching through all the existing data to see which cocktails might have been most effective for certain types of cancers?
Actually, we're not really looking at databases of patients. One of the biggest reason is most medical institutions don't have great databases. There's a lot that needs to be actually curated, and we can't really get some great information. IBM has tried, and it's just not working.
The Watson.
Yeah. IBM Watson, and it's not working, and it's a setback for the whole profession because IBM has put a lot of marketing effort, and it comes back, you know, fighting them. Instead, what we've done is accumulate the knowledge of our founders, the knowledge of the UCSD Moore Cancer Center team and some other institutions. And we have put all of that knowledge into a computer program. So picture 1,000 oncologists who are looking at your own problems in a very short time and come back with a report that suggests different selection options for treatment. That's what it is. So it helps a little oncologist that could be in the middle of Minnesota who doesn't have the knowledge. We make him become an expert actually in precision medicine instantly using our technology.
How do physicians access the information then? I'm guessing this is relatively new in the medical world, and I'm guessing not all oncologists know about it yet, but the ones that do, how would they access?
So the way they access is right now, most patients who get to know about us, they definitely talk to their oncologist. So we have to educate some of these oncologists and explain to them how we can help them. We're not there to replace them, but we're there to help them be better at their job. And so once the patient's tumor has been DNA sequenced, which some oncologists know how to do very well, we're taking that information and we generate a report. Our report's called Precigene, and we send it back to the oncologist and to the patient, and they can discuss about what's the best option.
So the oncologist would take a sample of the tumor, and then it would be sequenced. The genes would be sequenced. Would that be the right word, or is it a different?
That is correct. And something very interesting to learn is when that technology started, we needed an actual piece of tissue of the tumor. Now, there are better ways, what's called liquid biopsies, where we just, with a blood draw.
Seriously, you don't have to biopsy the tumor now. You can just draw the blood and get the genome, the markers, or whatever it is out of there.
That's right. It's nice to do both if you can. Because the more information we have, the better it is.
Do you have any statistics on the difference between patients that are treated traditionally versus the ones with CureMatch and the information you provide?
We don't have current statistics. There are a few studies that are being made all around right now. The problem is the way clinical trials are right now doesn't work for precision medicine. Clinical trial, again, assume to have all patients with the same illness getting the same drug.
And this would go against that model.
That goes totally against the model.
So that's a conundrum then. If you're going to get approved by the FDA to do this, then how do you do a trial when everybody's got a different outcome?
So it is changing. The FDA not too long ago actually has approved the first drug called Keytruda based on a gene and not on a cancer.
Seriously?
Absolutely. It is changing. They just approved another treatment called CAR-T by Novartis, who's a tall, fantastic way to also to cure cancer, some of the blood cancers.
So it's based on that patient's genome, the treatment, not necessarily the kind of cancer that they have.
It's based on the DNA sequencing, on the molecular profile of that tumor.
You can get that from blood then?
We can get that from blood in most cases.
This sounds like a true paradigm shift.
It is, absolutely.
And where are you at in the process of educating oncologists in this? Is this just beginning to educate oncologists, or have you been out? I mean, you just started this, a few years ago, right?
2 years ago, exactly. Yeah. But the whole project was started 4 years ago.
Does the oncologist have to have access to a gene sequencing machine themselves, or do they send you the blood sample personally, and then you go back with the treatment options or tell them what the best treatment might be?
That's a good question. Actually, we're not accessing any sample ourselves. And there are companies who specialize doing that. There are companies that do solid biopsies, from solid tumors, and some others that do liquid biopsy from just a blood draw. And so these companies also are reimbursed now, which is good. It took them a while to do that.
Under Medicare, Medicaid kinds
That's
of reimbursements?
Right. That's correct.
Which is the big one to start with, right?
Which is hard to get. Yeah. For us, it's going to take us a little more time. Even though our service is not very expensive, we're charging $1,000 per patient, and they can have access to as many reports as the cancer changes. And we're not charging for kids. I have 4 kids myself.
Seriously?
So, absolutely. We don't want to charge for kids. And to me, when a kid has a cancer, it's the whole family that has cancer. It's just not one person. It's the whole family.
We just heard the same thing, and I heard that for most adults, and the average maybe chemo treatment might be 3 to 6 months. For a child, it's typically 3 years.
It is very, very, very different. One big lack in that industry is about pediatric cancer research. When you think only 4% of the money that comes for the research goes to pediatric cancer, and kids are the ones who have the most to lose. They're going to lose their whole life, their whole entire life. And I'm surprised that nobody really reacts to that. CureMatch will start very soon, a CureMatch Foundation, to address this, because we think that there is a need for more research to help kids being treated with a medicine that's been designed for them.
Can the listeners and the viewers on Facebook contact you or get the information from curematch.com?
Absolutely.
Does that website have a portal into what they need to know?
They absolutely can contact us at curematch.com, and they're very welcome to send me a personal email at blaze@curematch.com.
blaze@curematch.com, C-U-R-E-M-A-T-C-H.com. It sounds revolutionary. I mean, it does. It talk about disrupting an industry. It sounds like you're on the verge of something very cool here. That's got to be personally very fulfilling.
Actually, now that I think about it, I'm really happy that I was diagnosed with cancer. I don't think I would have, found my own personal mission, and I think I just found it. And hopefully I'm not going to die from cancer. I don't think I will, as long as I got a fantastic team around me. And I hope we're going to be able to save a lot of people, or at least to improve their outcome.
You mentioned, and we're coming to the end here very quickly, but you mentioned that that money that they spend, the $1,000, gives them access to ongoing diagnosis or gene therapy. Does that change as the cancer is treated? Is that why there might be multiple reasons to do that?
Yeah, there are sometimes multiple reasons, because you have the cancer cells, they have clones, and sometimes they have a different footprint, genetic footprint. So while you get rid of one type of cancer cell,
something,
the other one that was
up,
dormant, is actually developing. So, and that happens.
Wow. I tell you what, this is pretty cool. CureMatch.com, blaze@curematch, if you want to send it, blaze@curematch.com. If you want to send him a personal email, Blaze Barillet, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Wow.
That's a heady topic.
Great show.
Great show.
You've been listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
You folks have a great and prosperous day. Bye-bye.